How's it going, everybody? Brian Elvers and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio, June 8, 2026, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. And yes, June 8th was the day that this shareholder lawsuit was supposed to, I guess, go to court, and not surprisingly, it's not.
No. It would have been far too big of a risk for WWE to go to court. I mean, the judge all but said that he didn't believe them. So going to court would be, I mean, it's strategic. You know, you can go in there and go like the plaintiffs had a lot of leverage on this settlement. We don't know what the number is, but obviously they've agreed to a number. But for the TKO brand and everything,
the judge has to okay the settlement still.
Yeah. I mean, 95% of the time they do. You know, the Judge Bulwar on the Kung Lee settlement, who didn't okay it, was the exception to the rule. It's a rarity. Usually the judges are just fine. Like in the Bulwar, you know, Judge Bulwar in that case just felt that those fighters had gotten so screwed over and thought that they settled too easily. In this case, I mean, yeah, the judge could go in there and just tear it up, but this is a different type of thing. It's not fighters being abused in pay. So I don't think that, you know, it's just a number. And I think he'll approve the number most likely. I'm sure, you know, there may be a chance that he would wish the number was higher, but it's not that type of a settlement. I mean, it's like there's not a number high enough to really, hurt them in a way that's meaningful, I suppose.
So theoretically, we should find out what they have to pay.
Yeah, it'll come out at some point. You know.
And do you think that there will be any heads that will roll?
No, there might have been. One of the things why they had to settle is because there could have been stuff that came out in the case where heads might have to roll. But by settling it, it pretty much...
So you don't think there will be a fall guy?
Nick Khan would be the only fall guy, so I would say no. I don't think there'll be a fall guy.
Hmm.
Or they could blame Vince for everything, because Vince isn't even in the company anymore. But I don't think there'll be a fall guy on this one, no. You know, and this one's, you know, unlike the UFC case, which is, you know, there's still multiple cases ongoing in front of that judge, and that story will keep going. I mean, this one, the one person who I would say, or the one case that is hurt by the settlement, but it was going to settle, is the Janelle Grant case, because they were sitting there going like, you know, the Janelle Grant thing was the cat, you know, the Janelle Grant story in Wall Street Journal was the catalyst of every one of these things happening. You know, Vince leaving, Vince coming back, Vince having to put the thing for sale to keep the stock price from plunging while he stayed. And then the Vince departure due to the lawsuit itself. So that was the catalyst of everything. And one of the things is for that case, having Vince having to testify and picking that apart later, and perhaps some of the other people, but certainly Vince, especially and other, you know, as far as everything that happened and all that, you know, it could have been very beneficial to her case, and some of it's probably beneficial, but I mean that one's up to a completely different judge, you know, because that one, the key thing is not so much the case, but does it go to, you know, is it ruled to go to arbitration? If it goes to arbitration, then that's one thing. It's going to go and be a case. At the end of the day, that's going to be a settlement too. But they're not going to settle until, you know, they have to. Just like this one. I mean, they went on and on and on and on and on. And they literally settled, you know, days before the case was about to start. You know, for the obvious reason. You know, you couldn't take the risk of the judge making a ruling that could hurt them a lot worse. And from a plaintiff standpoint, deep down, do you really think when they filed this case they expected to get 450 to 900 million? No. I mean, you know, I expected they would get, and I'm sure they expected they would get tons less. And it's better to go in there and say, okay, it's a success, and we're not risking, because, you know, if something happens and you botch the case, you could end up with zero. But, I mean, the judge, you know, the judge really forced it. They, you know, from a WWE standpoint, a Nikon standpoint, McMahon standpoint, you know, they had hired that judge, and he made it very, very clear that he didn't believe them. And when the judge tells you before the case, essentially, that I will give you every opportunity to defend yourself, but just keep in mind that in most of the key stuff, I don't believe you because you destroyed evidence, it's probably not the best idea to roll the dice in a trial. I mean, the plaintiffs had all of the leverage in this case and probably got the best deal they thought they had without rolling the dice that maybe they screw up and there's something somewhere, then maybe they know of something somewhere that could screw up their case that maybe, you know, led them, you know, at the end of the day, these cases rarely go to court. It could have, but you're just going to go to court. You got usually going to have both sides confident, and clearly there was one side that was not going to be confident in this one.
So if WWE ends up paying $500 million, let's just throw out a number.
I don't think it'll be that high.
Whatever the number is. So how does this money get distributed?
It would go to the shareholders. I don't know how that would affect Vince because Vince is the number one shareholder. So there would probably be something in there where Vince can't benefit from it, I'm going to guess. But the nature of distribution is very interesting. And the other thing is the nature of the payment is interesting. Does WWE insurance cover it? Does Vince have to cover it? Is it a split between Vince and WWE covering it? I mean, the WWE as a company was never sued. TKO was never sued. The people who were sued were Vince McMahon, Nick Khan, Paul Levesque, Michelle Wilson, and George Barrios. I think that the feeling is that Nick Khan, Barrios, Michelle Wilson, and Levesque would all be covered by WWE since they were working for WWE. Whether Vince would be or not, I would think he's not working for WWE, so I don't know. And also, they were all under one legal umbrella, and Vince was under a completely different legal umbrella, you know, different legal teams for each. So how that all works out, that's the distribution is interesting, and the nature of the you know, how the money, where the money comes from, is also going to be interesting. But you know, I mean, it's, you know, that's pretty much going to be it for the case. I mean, we know a lot of stuff, and it's probably not stuff that they didn't come off looking good in this case at all. I mean, especially towards the end.
And what about this new UFC lawsuit?
Yeah, so let me get the details here. It's basically Paul Romano and Susan Douglas, who are the plaintiffs, who are suing. See, they're not suing UFC. They're trying to get this show on Sunday at the White House canceled, which it's not going to happen. I mean, it's a suit that's getting them a lot of publicity. I mean, I've seen it all over the place news-wise. But I mean, I even heard on the radio as I was, you know, tonight. But it's not gonna, you know, the show's gonna happen. But they're suing the National Park Services. They're suing regional director and director of the National Park Services, the Department of U.S. Department of the Interior, and the head of the Department of the Interior, basically for allowing the show to go on because of the idea that there is a law against for-profit events in the national parks, and the front of the White House is under the auspices as a government park. So, in theory, that would mean that the show should not be allowed. That's the argument that they're making. And, you know, maybe, you know, whatever. It's a news story, but it's not, you know, the show's going on. I mean, and I don't think anyone expects that the show is not going to go on. Somebody might need to get paid off, but that's the nature of the beast.
All right, the Hogan documentary.
Yeah. You haven't seen it, have you?
No.
Yeah.
I watched the commercials and...
I watched
not on my list.
Yeah, I watched a lot of it. It was actually pretty fascinating. I mean, the star of the documentary was Linda, without a doubt. He came off, it's interesting because he said a lot of stuff that's surprising, contradictory to many other things that he said in the past.
That doesn't sound right.
And you know, it was his last major interview before he passed away, and I think that there was an attempt to try and, you know, set some records straight. You know, I think in some cases maybe the memory wasn't the best. In some cases there's embellishment. I think, like, watching it, it was pretty interesting. You know, I mean, they went into a lot of different subjects. You know, a lot into the marriage, a lot into the home life, a lot into the wrestling. You know, the portrayal of him in wrestling, I thought, was, you know, historically suspect in a lot of ways, especially the WCW. You know, they basically, I mean, Hogan. So Hogan's thing is that when he and WWE had their split in 1993, which was when, you know, Vince wanted him to lose the championship to Bret Hart, and he refused and dropped it to Yokozuna, which there was, it wasn't outright said in the documentary, but if you read between the lines, it is very much said. You know, they had Bret there, and, you know, Bret, they didn't, you know, I'm sure Bret would have said it, but they didn't use that, because it's not like Brett's shy about that story at all. And they didn't, you know, I mean, Hogan made it very clear, because he was just ripping on Brett. Like, Brett is just, he's not the guy to carry a company. That was Hogan's thing. He outright said, you know, he's not the guy. But they don't say, like, you know, they were supposed to wrestle at SummerSlam. You know, coming off of that thing, the WrestleMania thing in Vegas, you know, where Brett lost the title and then Hogan beat Yokozuna in 24 seconds or whatever it was. And the media guys were Dave Shoemaker and Keith Elliott Greenberg. And their basic thing is you know, how, you know, it was Brett's time and everything like that. But I mean, the reality, and I mean, that documentary, you know, that they did on that WrestleMania, I mean, you remember that they had like 2,800 tickets sold. And it wasn't until Hogan came back that people started, you know, selling tickets and everything. I mean, it was, that WrestleMania was fixing to be a disaster. And Hogan really did save it. And there was a reality that you know, Hogan was so big. And it's like, you know, they made, you know, when they talked about Hogan in his glory days, you know, they, you know, what they said and how big he was and everything like that, that was not exaggerated. It was very fair. But they kind of acted like, even though Hogan was declining, in you know, his era was starting to end, the gimmick was running its course, all true. The fact is he was still a bigger draw in wrestling than anyone until Steve Austin showed up and surpassed him. And that was 1998. And this is 1993 when this is all going on. And, you know, but, you know, his thing was that there was this big fight and Vince told him, you will never work here again. He doesn't say what it was from, but obviously it was being asked to lose to Brett. But that's not really what happened. I mean, they had the fight. I mean, that's for sure. And it may have been the way he described it, with him saying, I used all these words that really would have, if they ever came out, would have been a whole lot worse than what did come out, which is the sex tape words. I called him every name in the book, and he said, you'll never work here. But the reality is, he worked there for a while longer. And, you know, he went out there and he lost to Yokozuna, and then he left, which was the plan. You know, I mean, he basically said, I'm leaving. And it was his decision to leave. You know, it's like, I'm leaving because Vince wanted him to drop it to Brett and said, I'm dropping it to Yokozuna and I'm leaving. And then you can do whatever you want. And then obviously, you know, Brett got the championship again later. And so the WCW thing, they kind of go with the idea that he went to WCW and he wasn't very effective.
What?
And what?
That's not right at all.
Well, the story is he became effective with the NWO. Okay,
so he was effective in 94
as a pay-per-view draw.
Yeah,
he turned their pay-per-view business around.
Yes, which it was gigantic.
I mean, he was a super pay-per-view attraction. So he talked about, you know, he signed, they never mentioned the New Japan stuff at all, and just, you know, he's doing it. Eric Bischoff, who's on the dock, you know, I offered him this contract. Hogan said the contract was so good, he was offered so much that he actually had to give something back, because if he didn't, there would be people who would be fired for giving him such a ridiculous contract, which was an interesting choice of words, but he did get that incredible contract out of it. And, you know, but they basically were like when he had the feud with Flair, the original feud in WCW, how it was like, you know, he was older and it wasn't the same Hogan. He didn't have the same physique and all this. And it's like, he was pretty effective, you know, and it's like people were booing him. And in time, there were cities where people booed him, like, you know, Richmond, Virginia. You know, when you went to Flair country, you know, Four Horsemen country, yeah, he was going to get booed. And who the fuck cares that he got booed? He was still drawing, you know? It was like that. This listening to cheers and boos and everything went, well, box office numbers are up, and ignoring the box office and then worrying about cheers and boos is like, you know, I mean, Vince didn't do it with Cena, but it's the stupidest thing. It's like, if I'm a babyface on top, John Cena, you know, at certain points, right? And biggest draw in the business, and they're booing me, I'm selling more merchandise than everybody else. It's like, oh, go turn me heel. I mean, that's fucking stupid, you know? And with Hogan, I mean, don't get me wrong, when they finally did the heel turn, it worked, and it was a big success for several years and all that, of course. But, you know, they were doing like he was like not succeeding, because there were some cities he went into where they booed him, and they were going to in some cities. He in the hardcore WCW, not, I would say WCW, Jim Crockett promotion cities, where Ric Flair, you know, had been the enduring superstar, not Hulk Hogan. And he was the, you know, many people saw Hogan as the anti-Flair. He was going to go in those cities and get booed. And he did. Now, as far as the turn, you know, the turn, and then everything was on fire and went through that. Then they went through, a lot of the family situation and a lot of depth with the family stuff and the cheating and everything like that. And then it was kind of like, you know, they didn't go into the demise of WCW. It was just, I guess the way they did it was just kind of like they brought in Vince Russo. It all went to hell, and Vince McMahon bought it for $2.5 million, which is what happened essentially. And then Vince called him to come back, the Rock thing. So one of the things I thought was interesting, he said, is that he had a lot of regrets, and he, you know, one of them, you know, I mean, the big one was like he was hurting so bad, and he's talking about all the painkillers that he was taking, and it's Hogan, so it could be exaggerated, but he was taking so much stuff, you know, I mean, that guy was hurting so bad. And, you know, the big thing was is that he wished he never learned that leg drop, because he just felt that it destroyed his spine, and his back was so bad. And then he's out there doing standing barbell curls with a swing and everything at 69 years old. I was stunned. You know, with that back, you know, but he was. He would never have done that. He said he would have retired. If he could have gone back, he'd have retired after the match at WrestleMania with The Rock. And he said he just should have walked off. The TNA run was basically explained that after the divorce, he was broke and he just needed the job, which is never what I heard ever at the time. And even though she did get 70%, he still had 7 million, which isn't like, it's not like he was poor and broke, and it's not like he couldn't have done endorsements or things like that. It's not like $100 million or $30 million or something like that, but, you know, he ended up with 7 or 8 million, and after everything, he basically, you know, I mean, it's a very, very nasty divorce, and evidently she had a lot more on him than he had on her, you know, because she got 70% of, which was, I thought was so sad in some ways, just because he had worked so hard for all those years and drawn so much money, and, you know, and she ended up getting it, but that was the settlement that was reached, because I don't think he wanted to go to court on too many things, just kind of like here. And, you know, so that was, That was just some of the stuff. But when I you know, just I think that that portrayal of what he was in WCW, you know, essentially trying to make him like, after the WrestleMania when he came back, the one where he left with Sid and then he came back, that it was all done. You know what I mean? And it's like, it wasn't, it never was 1989 or 88 again. Obviously not. But like I said, like, he was still the biggest star in professional wrestling and the biggest draw until 1998. So, and he wasn't a failure as a, you know, when he was in WCW, he did not draw for WCW Saturday Night. He did not move the ratings like they expected. He absolutely did move the pay-per-view numbers, probably more than anyone expected. I mean, you know, he single-handedly took their pay-per-view business from you know, terrible to fairly decent, and sometimes even really good. And, you know, the house shows when he was on them, you know, he drew much, you know, probably 3-4 times what the company would draw without him on those shows. So it's not like he's this, you know, like, oh, his day's over and nobody was cheering for him. They were cheering for him. And, you know, so, you know, the, so I just didn't really like that. It was, again, in the end, too much of a WWE version of the story to make them look like the smart ones. Although in the end, Hogan, in his mind, and he made this very clear, that he was very resentful of Vince in 93 when Vince basically said that, you know, Vince's idea was Hogan's 40, he's done. Savage is 40, he's done. Roddy Piper's 40, he's done. And Hogan feels that the WCW run vindicated him in the sense of he said I was done, and then I came in and, you know, for 83 weeks, you know, we were ahead, so I wasn't done. And that was like his, you know, it was like that, that I think in the end, you know, even, you know, he had that bitterness against Vince for telling him in 93 to lose to Bret Hart because you're done, and then him having many more successful years afterwards, and then Vince even calling him back and everything like that. And you know, so that was that. And they also had Levesque after the match with The Rock, and then, you know, they said, like, you know, Vince wanted to put the title on him, which, if you remember, he did for a very brief period of time because he was so hot after that match, you know, that pop in Montreal and everything. And Levesque was on basically saying, like, that was stupid because it was just a nostalgia pop and it'd be gone in 3 weeks. And I mean, it was. That was a nostalgia pop. And I wouldn't say it was gone in 3 weeks, but I mean, at the time, it seemed like a good idea to put the title on him. And I remember the day, there was a day we were on the Yada show, I think it was, but we were on the show. And I remember the quarter hours came in and there was this quarter hour that Hogan was on. And it plummeted. And I remember thinking, it's like, it's over. Not that he's over for good, but as a world champion, he was the champ. This is when he was world champion in that brief period. It's over. And Vince obviously thought at the same time, because the very next match, Vince took the title off of him. And that was not the plan. So, you know, which, by the way, tells you the somebody, again, just like the core, you know, you think that, like, TV ratings or whatever. That was the impetus, was that quarter hour that plummeted with Hogan was, okay, the nostalgia run is over, and we got to get that belt off of him. And then they talked about the Michaels match. They didn't go in a lot of depth, but they showed Shawn doing all those bumps and trying to make Hogan look like a fool. And Hogan kind of made a remark where you knew he wasn't happy about it, which he was not. But they kind of justified it, like, oh, Hogan was so old and he couldn't do anything, and Shawn had to do that to save the match, which I strongly disagree with, you know, but that was how they portrayed it in a lot of ways.
All right, well, that's the, some people were asking on the chat, that's a Netflix documentary. There is not another new Hulk Hogan documentary.
No, it's the one from a couple weeks ago. Yeah, I just sat down yesterday to watch it. It was like, really gripping. I had other things to do, so I didn't get to go to the end, but you know, it was very, very interesting to me. And I mean, the Hogan interview, the Hogan stuff was very good, and the Linda stuff was very interesting. I felt her to be pretty honest in it, you know, as far as like the good times, the bad times, the breakup. You know, I mean, she talked about dating the 19-year-old, which she dated for a long time, and all of that stuff. They showed the guy, you know, they talked about Hogan, you know, the marriage in their mind, the marriage was over before Hogan Knows Best, and they kind of went with Hogan Knows Best with the idea that I think that both of them, they were going to counseling, thought maybe the TV cameras would save it, but the reality was is that the tension of always having people there made it worse, and you know, like, then marriage fell apart, obviously, as that series was done filming.
All right, we got a winner of the Best of the Super Juniors tournament. Yo won. Yo rematch from last year, basically. He won this time.
Mm-hmm.
And away he goes.
Yeah. So Yo won the semi from... So the semifinals were Friday. And Kose Fujita beat Robbie Eagles. So they were in Gunma, and it was... you know, it was a cold crowd, I guess would be the best way to put it. You know, it was one of those Japanese crowds. They weren't bored. You could tell they were interested in the match, but they weren't a loud crowd, which, you know, if you watch Japanese wrestling, there's a lot of cities where that happens, and it's fine. But, you know, it doesn't take the match to the next level. I mean, the Fujita and Robbie Eagles match was an excellent match, but, you know, it didn't have great crowd reactions or anything, but technically, you know, really, really good. And then Yo and Wato. So you know how sometimes we just did this last week where we'll go like, I hated the match, you hated the match, and we go, but it was a hell of a match.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. And people don't get that. They get so mad at you and me. How can you say that? How can you say it was a great match if you say you didn't like the match? And it's like, I'm sure you'd say the same thing. I don't understand how you don't see the difference. Right?
It's I've seen many... it's usually some sort of hardcore violent match, which is absolutely not my cup of tea, but I can recognize that it was a really great match, and the fans are going crazy for the match, and it's clearly a successful match.
So it's a great match, right? I don't have to like great matches, you know, but if I say, oh, I didn't like this match, I'm going to give it 1 star when it was a great match. That's stupid. What I like and don't like, I mean, people don't get, it's immaterial. So anyway, the Yo match with Master Wato is like the opposite of this. I love this match. Now, was it a match of the year? Absolutely not. Was it technically a fantastic match? Yes. I mean, it was like everything. Yo is one of those guys, I remember that I went, this is many, many years ago, I was at the dojo in Carson, California, the LA dojo, and they had they had thrown some matches in there, just guys training, and Yo was one of those guys, and so I'm like really like on the ring, like even closer than PWG, like I am right at the ring while Yo is wrestling, and the one thing about Yo is that, you know how like there's guys where you see them on TV and this and that, and they're good, you know they're good. But when you see them live in the front row, you know, like, and you just go, you know what? Like, this guy is like a fantastic worker. You know, probably like you're working with someone, and you just go like, you know, yeah, I knew you're good, but my God, you're great. And Yo is one of those guys, if you are up close watching him, it's like everything he does is so solid and like no holes, you know, like the old time William Regal guys, like they would look at this guy and, you know, like Fit Finlay was, you know what I mean? Although Fit, you know, actually it's probably a pretty good person to say, you know, Fit Finlay was in some cases, you know, where people didn't know him. It's not like he got over like he was this giant superstar, but if you were probably at ringside watching Fit Finlay, you would go, or in the ring with him, you know, you would go like, man, this guy's like, cause I remember Terry Funk going like, you know, Fit Finlay's like one of the best heels, or not even, like, he once told me that he thought Fit Finlay was the best heel in the world when he came back from Germany from a German tour. And I don't even know if he was in the ring with him, but he watched him. She says, Fit Finley. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I know how good he is. Oh, no, you don't. You don't know how good he is because you haven't seen him live. I'd seen him on tape. And I think Yo is, again, a guy like that where if you really watch him from a close thing, he's very technically excellent. So Yo and Watto, I loved their match, but was it a great pro wrestling match? It was a good pro wrestling match. I wouldn't call it a great pro wrestling match. But technically it was awesome. But, you know, the moves all were good. That's what I mean. I mean, the moves were good. They made sense. It looked like a struggle. It looked like a sporting contest. It wasn't super exciting to the average fan, but it wasn't boring either. So anyway, they had that. So this match, today's match with the finals, which was Yo and Fujita. I mean, the good thing was is that in the building, it was a match where I don't believe anybody knew for sure who was going to win, and they took it very seriously. They had a full house, which shocked me, you know, because their business hasn't been the greatest. I mean, at Ota War Gym, I mean, it's probably the biggest crowd they've had at Ota War Gym in years and years, you know, much bigger than last year. And when the match started, like the people, it was just one of those things where, you know, I mean, if you had told me 4 days ago it's going to be Yo and Fujita, I'd go, well, Fujita should be in the finals, not Yo, you know, come on, that's a bad choice. But in fact, this is one where Ghetto was right, at least for the building and at least for the night. You could argue long term it's a different story, but in the building for the night, this crowd, for whatever reason, it's that thing that sometimes clicks. And the story, this is the story. The story is that Yo is 37 years old. We've been seeing him for 10 years. He's never won the G1, the Super Juniors. He's never won the singles junior title. And he's good. And we know he's good. And these people want him to win so bad. They know Fujita's probably better and younger and blah, blah, blah. But this crowd was probably 90% for Yo and loud. And they had their match. It was the John Cena, AJ Styles match in many ways. From one side, from the Yo side. I mean, Yo's whole match is essentially he's doing Nakamura's moves, and he's doing Okada's moves, and he's doing Goto's moves and other people's moves. You know, the whole match, he's doing other people's moves, and it's getting over. I mean, it's like it's getting over. Some people don't like that, but, you know, that was the basic gist. Fujita's just doing for the Fujita match. But, you know, they went 28 minutes, and I mean, it was an excellent match. You know, I mean, maybe the best match of the weekend that I saw. You know, I mean, not including that Riot match. That's something totally different. But it was a hell of a match. You know, it wasn't the greatest junior final of all time. No. There's many that were better. But it was on the, you know, top 10%, 15%. Excellent match. Yo ended up winning with his, you know, usual move, the what's it called, the direct drive. And so it's going to be Yo and Doki, probably at Dominion. Hasn't been announced yet, but that's usually what it is on the 15th. And, you know, so that was that. It was a big, big success in the building, though. I mean, you know, like when I heard about Yo being in the finals and saw the Gunma matches, I wasn't that thrilled about Yo, but, you know, they clicked in. It worked. I mean, that's all I could say is it worked. You cannot argue that it worked for the night. You could say, you know, why do it? You know, you could say, why do it with Yo? They need to go with younger guys. And you're right if you say that. They need to go with younger guys. Yo is not the guy. I, in a sense, still probably would say it was a mistake. But in the building for the night and for the match, it was really a great presentation.
Well, you mentioned the Riot match. If you guys want to see it, it is in the daily update, I think a couple of days
Friday,
ago.
Friday daily,
update, yeah.
Friday daily update, the Riot match, yeah.
That's about 25 minutes of absolutely wild high spots.
Yeah, it's
about
it's
25
the,
minutes.
Yeah, it's the, what's it's people are telling me that Riot is kind of like the Mexican version of PWG. And I mean, this, when I was watching this match, I was just like, man, this reminds me of PWG. Because the crowd was, you know, it's a building with, you know, probably 400 people. They reacted like a PWG crowd completely. They worked like this match. If this match had been in PWG, you know, because again, things get wilder and wilder as the years go by. If this match was transported back a couple of years ago and in PWG, people would be just absolutely raving about it, like the craziest thing they'd ever seen. There's a guy in the match, Sonic, who's I believe he's still in high school, and he's really, really short. And man, he's unbelievable. I don't know if, you know, there's a lot of luck that goes into this as far as getting the break. If there was a PWG, I could tell you that a lot of the guys in this match would have been from this. They would see this tape and they would bring him in, and they would, you know, break him into the U.S. independent scene. But I mean, that match was fantastic. I thought, did you see, how much did you see?
I saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't even attempt to explain it. It was just like, from the moment things started, it was just boom, 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 boom for like 25 straight minutes. I mean, some of the craziest moves you've ever seen. Gringo Loco in there to slow it down here and there, but he's awesome. And yeah, it was just, you should go out of your way to watch it. It is long. It's about 25 minutes. Yeah. But it's nonstop action for 25 minutes.
Yeah, Sonic is like the star of the match. Bandido is like the charisma of the match. I think the thing that was the most impressive, not the most impressive, but the thing that kind of like shocked everyone is, you know, there's like, you know, again, like maybe 400 people in the building, and they threw $600 into the ring, you know, which I have never, I mean, I'm sure it's happened somewhere, but I have never heard of a match where $600 was thrown in after the match was over. And again, this is not like a crowd of 5,000 people. This is a crowd of a couple hundred people. So that was impressive. I mean, the people in the building, like, they just thought, like, and I'm sure I would have too if I was in that building. It's like, I never saw a match like this. I've seen matches close to this. And, you know, I mean, the closest proximity that I could come up with is, you know, the match with Adam Cole and the Young Bucks against Ricochet, Will Ospreay, and Matt Sydal in PWG, which that match, what I would say is that match built to a finish better. That match as a, you know, building a match and everything like that was far better. But this match just had the moves of that match and more. You know, I mean, the athleticism, just incredible. And again, these guys are, you know, I mean, these guys are, for the most part, other than Bandido and Gringo Loco, you know, I mean, most of those guys are younger and everything. And Vengador, and there's other, you know, the Turbo, I think. But whatever, like a lot of these guys, if this was 8 years ago, a lot of these guys we'd be seeing these on the U.S. indie scene, all these guys. Noisy Boy, we'd be seeing all of them on the U.S. indie scene, and maybe we will off of this match somewhere else. But PWG was the usual introduction to guys like that on the U.S. scene, and you know, like Bandido was in it, you know, just, you know, usually, like, you know, usual Super Bandido performance.
All right, any other CMLL notes?
Well, that wasn't CMLL.
Well, are there any CMLL notes?
Yeah, they had a big weekend this weekend. The Friday show, they had, let me just make sure I got that. The Friday show was pretty great. It was, the one was Sammy Guevara and Beast Mortos and Black Tiger against the Villano Tercera brothers and Cavernario Barbaro. And, really, really good match. The end, you know, the Mortos got pinned by Viano, one of the Vianos, and it's to set up Viano's getting a shot at the Ring of Honor tag team titles, it's not officially announced for this coming Friday at Arena Mexico. By all indications, it probably will happen on that show. They'll announce that probably on Monday night. But, you know, excellent match. And then the next match, which was probably the match of the weekend. Commander and Soberano Jr. This match, I mean, I say go out of your way to see. I mean, the keys, the thing here is that because he hasn't been abused in the way, I don't know if abused is the right word. It's kind of the right word, though. The way we've seen him in AEW, to them, it's like Commander is a authentic American AEW star who is Mexican. So they see him as a real big deal. And so this was, you know, you have Soberano Jr., who's the second most over guy, and to some of the audience, the most over guy in that whole promotion, against Commander, who they see as a real life superstar. And, you know, they just put on an incredible match. And it was Commander's wrestling was what put it over, combined with Soberano's personality. You know, I mean, Soberano's personality does make a big, big difference. And, you know, they had a night with a lot of women fans, which helped. I mean, even with Mystico, you could hear the, you know, a lot of women fans, but with Soberano, obviously, even more. And, you know, the Mystico return. So Soberano beat him, and with a, you know, fire driver. Great. Like I said, great, great match. I would highly, highly recommend it. I wouldn't call it like match of the year, but it's just below, you know. I mean, it was, I think Ospreay and Davis was a little bit hotter, but you sort of can't tell because they mic Arena Mexico so badly. But this was a hot crowd for this match. And then the main event was Mystico return with Mosca Dorada and Neon against make sure I got the right trios guys. It was the Galeón Fantasma. So it was Defunto and Zander Khan Jr. and Furia Roja. They had a great match. You know, Mystico was, he looked the same. He looked great. Wasn't slowed down coming the first match back from his injury. Dorada was out of this world. Neon was great. Super finish. Mystico, Neon did that run down the ramp, double springboard, moonsault to the floor, while Dorada does the moonsault off the post to the floor and then in the ring. Mystico does the La Mystica on Defunto. Everything that you would expect, everything you would want. Great main event. But this was like the big week for Commander. So last night at Arena Coliseo, Ultimo Guerrero beat Mortos, which, you know, good match, very good match. And then Commander and Templario beat Angel De Oro and Viano Tercera Jr. They had an awesome match. Every bit as good as better than the main event the night before. I mean, almost as good as the singles match. So it was a big, big night. Today, it was Mystico and Commander as a tag team. And let me see what we got here. But today's show was very, very different because it was, they were against Black Tiger and Volador Jr. So today's show was very much a kids' audience. I mean, it was like 7,500 people, which is, you know, for a Sunday afternoon show or late afternoon show, that's a pretty damn good crowd, you know, because it's Mystico, and I think the idea of Mystico and Commander's team was the big thing. But it was that, you know, they worked it like it's a show for a lot of kids. There's a lot of simple stuff, you know, tugging on the mask, and it was still like really good wrestling. But I mean, but you could just hear like the audience reaction, you know, just lots of kid reaction. And Mystico, when he came out, just got that ungodly reaction when he came out. So they also did, what did they do today with Sammy Guevara and Mortos beat Gran Guerrero and Stuka Jr., which was actually a lot better than I expected it to be. So, Sammy Guevara and, Mortos is always going to be good, you know. I mean, he was basically what you'd expect. He's doing something. So the first night, he did this, you know that tope where he spins through and hits the guy?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first night he does it, and he basically, it's not like Bonkhead's headbutt, but he's like to the side, it's not direct hit. So it's like he headbutts the other guy's head, right, in the dive. And I thought, oh, you know, he went a little too far on the right. Okay, so no biggie, you know, shit happens. But then on today's show, he does the exact same move the exact same way. And it's like, oh, he actually, that what he did on Friday wasn't a mistake. It was, that's a plan. So I don't know. I mean, if, when he gets back to the U.S., because he's got a visa issue, he can't get back, he's doing that move to where it's like, which is actually like, you know, a more far more difficult move, don't you think, where you're trying to basically do the, it's similar to the you know, the one that Kaiser does, you know what I mean, with that move he's doing, except he's doing in the end of a twisting tope where, you know, you're hitting him with the headbutt block, kind of like, I mean, that was like a classic move in the 60s and 70s of the Mexican wrestlers in the ring. I mean, I never saw anyone do that spin ever. Do the spin into like a headbutt thing. So that was an interesting variation.
All right, we got Steve Macklin and Myla Grace both gone from TNA Wrestling.
Yeah, both wanted out.
Which is obviously very interesting because they did that storyline where...
Yeah, a couple months ago.
He lost Feast or Fire, and he got fired, and then beat a bunch of people up, and in storyline, they brought him back and rewarded him with a title shot.
He was
and,
back.
And now he's gone.
He lost Feast or Fired. He was gone. He was back on the very next show.
Yeah.
It's not even like they...
I don't even think he ever left.
Well,
like,
he didn't.
The story was that he was leaving the building and then ended up attacking Santana, if I recall correctly. So he never even left the building. He didn't have to come back. He never left.
No.
It was the storyline.
So, you know, a lot of people are using this because again, Macklin was one of their stars. They're, you know... And saying, like, this is the end or this is whatever. I mean, the one thing I will say with TNA is that they are not that interesting right now. I mean, I don't really hear much talk about them or anything. But it is, look, it's like there is a history that goes back decades of people who work with WWE. And it pretty much always ends the same way. You know, you bring in WWE people and... They're the big stars, and they beat your guys, and they never, I don't say they never do jobs, because they do jobs, but they don't do meaningful ones, and your attendance goes up, because you have, like, bigger stars than your own guys, and then by them winning your championships, they establish themselves as, in fact, bigger stars than your own guys, and in the long run, what ends up happening is they stop coming. And when they stop coming and you have to go and build this thing with your own stars after you've already shown everyone that the NXT guys, this isn't even main roster WWE, that the NXT guys are ahead of you on your own show, and now they're gone, and now you got to rely on your own guys, it's a struggle. I mean, as far as like what's going to happen, you know, I mean, there's a deal in there when they made the working agreement, you know, part of the working agreement is just if WWE wants to buy them, they can buy them. There's a set price and everything of what they'll pay. I don't know that WWE will ever buy them because that was the same deal that they did with you know, all the British promotions, if you remember years ago when Vince McMahon had this idea. Well, it wasn't his idea, but they tried to get Vince, hey, you know what we can do for the WWE network, let's get all of these European indies that were really good and put them on the network as new programming. And so they were all presented with a deal. And it was basically, we're going to start putting all your cards on the WWE network. So for them, it's like, wow, you know, way more exposure. But in all of the deals, after we have the right, and I you know, and there might've been a different money figure for each one, but, you know, it was like $1 million. We will, you know, when this is over, we will like buy you for $1 million, or we won't buy you. They didn't have to buy them, but they had the right to buy them. And you know, for those companies, it's kind of like, you know, they're small companies, you know, $1 million. It's like, we get $1 million from the WWE to sell the company at the end. It's not that bad. You know, it's a great thing. WWE bought none of them. So like a lot of people, when they're talking about TNA, and they may buy TNA, you know, for the tape library, it's the tape library is not as valuable now as it probably would have been years ago when you were putting out DVDs and when you had your own network. Like now it's like it's Netflix. Does Netflix really want to put up a whole bunch of old TNA TV shows? No, they don't. So the value, you know, are they going to start releasing DVDs again? Of course not. So, but still, like, the right is there. Whether they do it or not, I have no idea. You know, it's going to be a decision that Nick makes, and, you know, I don't know what their thoughts are. I'm sure that that's what Anthem probably would like at the end, or they wouldn't have made the deal. And that's where we're at right now. But, they were there. It was part of the wrestling war, and that was that.
All right, before we get into these shows, John Jones and Cormier.
Yeah, so there was a Cormier did a video, basically said that he and John Jones were offered $1 million. He didn't say $1 million. They were offered seven figures each, which is over $1 million, minimum $1 million, to do a wrestling match. And Cormier in the thing just goes like, everyone know, because I know I'll beat John Jones 10-0 in a wrestling match, which, by the way, I don't know that at all. But, and he goes, and John Jones knows I'll beat him 10-0 in a wrestling match. And it's like, the Daniel Cormier of 2008, okay, I think he beats John Jones 10-0 in a wrestling match. I'm pretty, you know, it might not be that easy. He certainly beats him in a wrestling match, the Daniel Cormier of 2008. Daniel Cormier is 47 years old. Very, you know, he'd have to train like hell to get back in shape. He's not in shape, but that's the key. He's 47 years old, man. I know he was a great, great wrestler, but you don't see any 47-year-old guys, you know. And John is, you know, he's 38-ish, and he's a better, you know, like, no, he never went to the Olympics in wrestling, and he didn't even, but if he'd gone into college wrestling, I think he would have done very well. I think he actually probably would have been a national champion. But he never proved that, and we don't know. You know, he went into fighting and ended up being, you know, super fighter. But it's neither here nor there. But his story is that John wants to change it to a submissions match, which is something completely different. And Cormier said that it's either it's freestyle wrestling or it's not happening. So there probably will not be. I mean, I don't, if I'm Cormier, it's just like, it's 47 years old. I mean, yeah, you can use $1 million, but I don't know. These older guys who come out of retirement to get a lot of money, I mean, I get why they do it, but they never look good. And wrestling, man, wrestling when you're older is, even when you're younger, it's hard. I don't know that. But whatever. And then we may see him again, or we may not. You know, I mean, ever since they did a reality show in Russia and, you know, they were challenging, you know, or John was challenging him and Cormier was, no, no, no. And now Cormier's like, if we do a straight wrestling match, I'll do it. So for that money. I mean, he had said before that it would take a ton of money and somebody offered a ton of money. I mean, I don't think that there's marketability in this, but there are people who are willing to spend incredible amounts of money for these freak show fights that rarely draw. You know, Ronda Rousey's comeback was the exception. That is not the rule. Mike Tyson's comeback was the exception. It's not the rule. Holyfield came back, nobody cared, right? You know, I mean Mike Tyson is a unique person. Ronda's a unique person. Jones hasn't been gone long enough for a comeback. And DC, God bless him, fantastic fighter and great, great athlete. He's not Ronda Rousey, and he's certainly not Mike Tyson as far as a marketable person. So, and not that he's not marketable, he's marketable as hell. You know, I mean, he had a great run. He was a superstar in the sport. But, he, you know, Chuck Liddell came back, and it wasn't a big deal, and he was a superstar in that sport. You know, Lesnar might be able to come back and do one of those things. If they do, I think if they do Lesnar and Fedor, I think that they could do business. But those type of, but for the most part, when you bring back, you know, the guys from the past, it usually doesn't work marketability wise. So anyway, but that's, there is that, that is on the table. It is in discussion.
All right, we got some notes from SmackDown and Collision from this weekend. Still 3 hours of SmackDown, although I thought that for a 3 hour show, it was better than usual. I did not.
It's still long, but yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, it's too long. It was, they had a lot of storyline elements to it, and they had a great crowd, so that helped a lot too.
We had Gunther showing up and destroying everything because he's mad about what happened at the pay-per-view. And then Cody comes out. And Sammy comes out as well. And they get into a big three-person brawl. And in the melee, Cody goes for a dive. Gunther pulls Sammy in front. Cody wipes out Sammy. So now Cody and Sammy are having issues. And Gunther wants a rematch. He ends up threatening a lawsuit. Another lawsuit here. Against Nick Aldis. And so it is agreed that next week he has accepted a rematch for a title match he lost, and he gets to choose the stipulation, I guess, to avoid a lawsuit, even though the referee made a call. And anyway, that match is taking place in 2 weeks on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if we're going to get a title change that everybody was expecting.
Good.
At the PLE.
So that would be the 19th?
I believe so, yes.
Okay,
the 19th. Two Fridays from now.
Okay, so when the pay-per-view is the 27th, right? Yeah, 27th.
June, yes.
Yes, yes.
We had four-way Queen of the Ring qualifier, Bayley, JC, Raquel, and Kiana. And pretty good match. Raquel got the win, pinned Kiana with the Tejano Bomb. And then the big story afterwards, obviously, they had a spot in this match, which it was good on paper, but it didn't quite work out, I think, the way they wanted. Because basically, Kiana tried to get a pin using the ropes. JC shoved her feet off the ropes. Julia took out JC. And so Kiana then saw her own partner there. And yeah. Thought Julia had shoved her feet off the ropes, which, of course, makes no sense.
Yeah.
And the larger issue was she actually saw it and had to pretend she didn't. But anyway, they got into an argument. And then afterwards, they got into another big argument after the match. And Kiana screamed at her, said she was all done, and shoved her. Julia ends up attacking her. So it looks like Julia is going babyface here. Obviously, mm-hmm. She was a huge babyface in Bologna. But yep. They've split up,
yep.
And Julie going babyface. We had Tala Tonga and Royce Keyes, which, I mean, the problem with the match is that Tala Tonga is tall, but he's not like a big, thick Andre the Giant type. And they had to work a match where we had to believe that Royce was unable to slam this guy. And it was just kind of impossible to believe. And then Tama got involved, and Royce took him out, but then Tala booted him, choke-slammed him, and pinned him.
But Royce did get the slam.
He did get the slam there at the end, after the fifth try.
Yeah, to save face at the end, yeah. Coming off the ropes or something, yeah.
So then,
after the pounce, I think.
They start beating on this dude afterwards. Truth tries to make the save. He gets killed. Priest comes down, yanks Truth out of the ring, says, not get involved with this. And then Royce is left all by himself, and Tama runs him over with the hidden blade. And then after killing the guy, Solo tries to recruit him again. So yeah. That storyline is ongoing.
Yeah. So they're the storyline is that Truth is trying to make a trio with Priest, but Priest and Keyes, neither of them want to team with the other one.
Yes. They don't... well, it's mostly Priest does not trust Royce.
Mm-hmm.
We had a celebration backstage with Liv, Dom, and JD, and they're celebrating Raquel. But then Liv makes a comment that her and Dom are going to win the King and Queen of the Ring. And so Raquel's kind of upset, and Liv tries to blow it off. So then after beating Royce Keyes, they announce that next week on SmackDown, it is Finn Balor, Jey Uso, LA Knight, and Royce Keyes in a mm-hmm. King of the Ring four-way. So two things going on there at once with Royce Keys. We had Rhea coming out for a promo. Charlotte interrupts and basically says, you know, I had fun teaming with you. We got a tattoo together after the PLE, but I am a competitor, and I want to win the Queen of the Ring. So she says it's going to be me and you for the title at SummerSlam. Tiffany then comes out, and her and Charlotte have issues, but then Jade comes out, and finally Charlotte offers a tag team match, teaming with Tiffany to take on Jade and Meechan, which honestly was better than I expected, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yeah,
it had a lot of heat.
They had a lot of heat, and Tiffany and Jade, who have had problems in the past working together, I thought they worked together really well here. And Tiffany ends up going for the Rolling Fireman's Carry, goes for the PME. Jade cuts her off, hits Jaded, and pinned her. So there's a lot of interference. B-Fab got involved, that sort of thing. But much better match than I would have expected. We had Carmelo Hayes and Ricky Saints, who appear to be doing like...
Best of 100.
One of those best of seven matches where they don't actually tell you it's best of seven.
Right.
Yes, but they had a very good match. And Ricky ended up reversing a cradle, pulling the tights, and got the pin. So I think they're 1-1 now, and I'd be all for them.
Yeah. I think, isn't it like 1-1 in the count-out match?
Might have been.
Yeah. But, I think it's just kind of like...
They work great together.
Yeah, they're really good. I think that the thing, it just feels like they don't really know what to do with them, so they're just going to put them against each other until they figure out what to do with each of them.
Fine with me. We had Chelsea meeting with Tiffany. They want a team. This is one of those deals where Chelsea...
She wants a team
with Tiffany. Tiffany wants none of this. I think we're supposed to want to see them team up, but they've given me no reason to do so.
Well, I think the deal is just that Chelsea wants Tiffany to be her best friend, and Tiffany's politely blowing her off at every turn.
Yes. Even though Chelsea is turning babyface...
She's a babyface.
So
now.
Tiffany's kind of like, I don't know. This whole thing's weird. So we had Chelsea versus Lash. This was not good.
No.
They did not work together well at all, honestly. And a lot of missed time spots. And finally, Chelsea went for a finish. They kind of awkwardly stood there for a long time. And then Lash just grabbed her and hit her finish and pinned her.
Yeah, Lash extension.
Yep. No Tiffany out there for Chelsea. We had more with Royce backstage. This was where Solo showed up, and he basically said that Roman made your boy Jacob kneel down. Royce goes, what does that have to do with me? And Solo goes, everything. You got nobody now. Jacob's gone. Priest doesn't want anything to do with you. I'm the only family you've got left.
So Jacob's off SmackDown then?
Looks like it, yeah. He's got to be on Raw.
Yeah.
He's got to serve Roman Reigns.
So we never got the Cody Rhodes-Jacob match. Okay.
Well, at this point, I mean, you know how things go. I mean, they move Finn Balor to SmackDown to get him away from the Judgment Day. And meanwhile, the Judgment Day is all over this show.
Yeah.
So I don't think it matters too
much.
Yeah,
but that's not going to be a permanent thing. That's just because Raquel was in that match.
So anyway, he basically says, did the Usos ever call you? Did Jacob call you? Did Roman call you? Nobody called you. I called you. I brought in Tama and Tala. I made them champions. They followed me. And you need to think about what I'm telling you. You got to stop being so difficult, or I will make this difficult. Then Royce got to thinking. Chad Gable showed up. Huge reaction. And he basically meets with Rey Fénix. And he explains, we had a great match at Mania, but I did under false...
Well, Chad was on earlier in the show.
Yes, but he meets with Fénix here. And he goes, yeah. I put on the mask to frustrate the luchadors, but it was my own frustration. I know it's not a joke. I was taking on a responsibility to a people, an art form, Lucha Libre, and made a mockery of it. I flew all the way here to Italy to tell you, I'm sorry. I would like your forgiveness. And Fénix says, well, now you understand what the culture's all about. Losing the mask is painful enough. I forgive you, but I am not the only one who you offended. And so I guess Chad's on a forgiveness tour.
Yeah.
They better not turn this guy heel after all this. They better not do a Lacey Evans.
I don't know what they're going to do, but I mean, I'm glad they're giving him some time, but I'm not sure a month from now that he's going to be far off the spot that he's always been in, you know. But we'll see.
I mean, man, they put that match on after Raw. They've had recaps on every single show they've done. Well, he showed up here and got a giant pop.
It's one of the best matches in their history. They should publicize it, and they should try to make stars out of it. They haven't followed up with Kaiser.
No, they have not.
Yeah.
Maybe that's next week.
Yeah.
We had Trick, Damian Priest, Braun Breaker, and Dom, King of the Ring match. And we had interference. JD got involved. Priest killed him. And then Liv hits the ring, gives Priest a low blow. And after multiple attempts, Dom finally hits the 619 and gets the pin. And so Dom has moved on in the King of the Ring tournament. Braun is out of the tournament. And so next week in the semifinals, it is Dom and Oba Femi.
Hmm.
So if Seth is winning this tournament, I still don't know why Oba Femi moved on to then lose in a singles match. Is he losing to Dom? Like, maybe a DQ or something, but...
He could get DQ'd, yeah. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I mean...
I presume it's Roman and Seth at SummerSlam.
Okay, so that makes the most sense. They've been wanting, that was supposed to be at Mania anyway. So Oba is going to have to get DQ'd against either Dom or Seth, right? It'd have to be one of those two.
Unless they plan on having Seth beat the guy, which I think would be a terrible idea.
Yeah, I don't see that one happening. I mean, that would be a terrible idea. So Dom in a DQ is the way out, you know, and then Dom advances and Seth can beat Dom. Yeah, that does seem to make sense in that way. But yeah, you'd have to do it on a DQ. I mean, you'd have to have, you know, you'd have to have six guys interfere to make it work the other way. And, you know, maybe Brock could be with one of the six. So, you know, you could always, I don't know though, I don't know. I don't see...
The only thing with Brock getting involved is, like, if they had done it the other way around and Oba Femi had just beaten Brock and then Brock's really angry and so he costs him his spot in the King of the Ring, that at least makes sense.
Yep.
But, like, Brock beat the guy. Why would he, like, take him out of this tournament?
Because they're in the middle of a feud. So that... But
he just beat him.
Yeah, but they're still feuding.
I know that, but, like, in storyline... I don't know.
You could do it. It's the middle of a feud. You could absolutely do that, but I don't expect that they'll do it. I just expect that, like, Oba loses his temper because I don't see them. I don't see them beating Oba twice. You know, I mean, I don't see that one. So I think that something happens and he accidentally gets DQ'd, and people get pissed, and that's the deal.
Collision was had a lot of good wrestling on the show. There was not really anything of note, like storyline-wise, almost whatsoever. We had Ty J and Divine Dominion, which, of course, Divine Dominion won to retain the tag titles.
It was a good match.
Yeah, it was fine, yeah. Then we had Shane Taylor destroying Alan Angels, at which point he called out the Death Riders. And so we got the Death Riders versus Lee Moriarty, Carly Bravo, and Sean Dean. They had a long match. It went through two commercial breaks and a lot of distraction there at the end. Both of the women got involved. Shane Taylor got involved. And finally, in the end, Moxley and Claudio laid out Bravo and more interference. And then finally, I guess Death Riders hit Carly Bravo and... Pac put him in the Brutalizer and submitted him. So they won after all that, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that does set up, however, in Moxley's... I think it's in Moxley's hometown, right?
Cincinnati, yeah.
Him and Shane Taylor.
Yeah, Moxley, Shane
Taylor. For the Continental title.
Yeah, and Pac and Mark Briscoe.
Yep. We had Tommaso Ciampa defeating Beef.
Pretty fairly loaded show on Wednesday, actually.
Yeah, I'll do the lineup here in a second. So, yeah, Tommaso Ciampa beat Beef.
Real quick.
And then cut a promo on Chris Jericho.
Yep.
And he pummeled this guy, put him in the lion tamer on the floor, told Tony Schiavone to announce to the world, Tommaso Ciampa is better than Chris Jericho. which Shivani eventually did. And then, yeah, that match is coming.
So I tell you what, the this is one of those things where, you know, sometimes when you switch sides, you kind of flounder, and sometimes you don't. And sometimes you go like, was it the right decision?
Let's look at where Ciampa is, and let's look at where Johnny Gargano is right now.
Oh, God. Oh, God, is that scary?
I mean, I got to give whatever Gargano's making to lay there on that box every week. I mean, good for him, but
I don't think that
they're in a very different place wrestling wise.
I don't know if that's what he wants his career to be, but you know, I mean, you're in WWE, and that's what happens. But man, I mean, Ciampa wasn't doing anything in WWE at all.
No,
and he's a great. I mean, that's the other thing is like the I don't think people really get that. You know, the idea that like, oh, you know, like you say these matches in AEW are better, and it's like it's not even necessarily the guys are better, although there are guys in AEW that are absolutely fantastic. But I mean, look at Ciampa, perfect example, right? He has matches in WWE and they were good. They was to AEW and they're fantastic. You know, and it's just because you know, it's just this style is more conducive to him. But I think it's more conducive to most, you know. I mean, and you know, you get more. It's not even longer matches. I mean, yeah, you get longer matches, but you're just way more dynamic. I think you know whatever is explosive. It's just like it's just quicker. You know, I don't know, but man, he is so much more effective than he was in WWE. I mean, he was effective in NXT. Don't get me wrong. But even now, he feels like a better wrestler than he was in NXT, even though he was pushed very hard in NXT.
Then we had Clark Connors and Juice Robinson, which was a good match. Finley ended up clobbering Juice with the shillelagh. Connor speared him, pinned him, and it was a good match. Good mm-hmm. match. They announced for the survival of the fittest for the vacant TBS title, I guess we've got Sheeta, Statlander, Mina Shirakawa, Harley Cameron, Queen Aminata, and Zeta Steel, all and doing promos.
So they're going
to build up the match.
So most of them will probably end up in the final six.
I would think.
I wouldn't necessarily say all of them, but I would think most of them would end up because they have six opponents, and if you know what I mean, it's like if they're the final six, that's kind of a giveaway. But I think that they'll be. You know, put it this way. I think that the eventual winner will be one of those six.
We had Los Facción, Rush, Dralístico, and Sammy versus Kyle, Roderick Strong, Orange Cassidy for the AEW World Trios titles. And another good match. Ended up with Sammy coming in. He tried to hit the go to hell on Orange Cassidy, but Cassidy avoided it. Shoved Dralístico into Sammy. Hit the orange punch on both of them. And got the pin. So, good match, long match, but same deal. Just a bunch of good long matches on this show. And then the main event was Hazuki and Persephone, Owen Hart Foundation tournament match.
I'll bet you nobody thought Hazuki's winning that one.
Are you really? I saw that all over the internet, and all I thought was, I know they just wanted to do this Mercedes Suzuki match again.
Yeah, that's why they did it. I mean, they wanted to do the Mercedes Suzuki match.
Yeah, I figured. I mean, the moment the match started, I figured that was what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was like the crowd, though. I mean, the first half of this match was absolutely heatless. They just.
Yeah, but they picked. They got the crowd going.
They didn't know what was going on early, but they worked great together. And by the end, they got the crowd.
Yeah.
And so Hazuki wins. And then afterwards, they're shaking hands, and Mercedes attacks Persephone.
Yes.
And she hits her with the belt, and she puts her in the statement maker. Hazuki runs down. Mercedes goes to leave, but then jumps Hazuki from the side, beats her ass as well, and basically laid both women out as she left.
Hazuki did dive on both of them, too. I mean, it's obvious they're going to do a Mercedes-Persephone match. Down the line somewhere. I mean, without a doubt, but I don't think that they want to do it just yet. Because, I mean, they also made the point that Persephone beat Mercedes to win the CMLL women's title. They pointed that out, too. So, and Mercedes attacked Persephone, not Azuki, first. So, you know, I think that they're going to, you know, at some point they're setting Persephone up for that bigger match later.
All right, so they announced for Dynamite, we got the Pac Mark Briscoe match. This is the Summer Blockbuster Show. So probably another 20-minute overrun. Pac versus Mark Briscoe. John Moxley, Shane Taylor for the Continental title. Young Bucks versus the Dogs, which they built up last week. We have the Swerve Brody King Owen Hart semifinal, which should be a great match. Winner goes on to face Will Ospreay in the finals. Mm-hmm. We've got Saray and Sky Blue in a women's Owen Hart Foundation tournament quarterfinal. And then Orange Cassidy faces Andrade. So that is coming up on Wednesday. And then
that
for...
That one's going against the NBA playoff game. And they're going against... there's a game... I think there's a game Monday, right? Tomorrow. Yeah, that's... I think that one... This could be, Raw's lowest rating ever on Netflix Monday, if they're going against that game, and then Wednesday AEW's gonna. I mean, they held up pretty good on Wednesday, but if it's game four and it could be the final game, that number will be that, you know, that's gonna be that'll be the hardest competition of the year that Dynamite's had.
Well, for the Raw show coming up tonight, we have Penta and Rey Mysterio for the Intercontinental title. Sol Ruka will defend the Intercontinental title against Lyra. We have a King of the Ring first round match. Seth Rollins, Javon Talatonga, and Ricky Saints. Mm-hmm. That's a weird match, dude.
Yeah.
Seth, Javon, Tala, and Ricky Saints.
Oh, that should be good, though. Seth's good. You know, Tala can play monster.
I guess.
Ricky Saints is good. Javon Evans can fly. I mean, I'm not worried about... I think that's a good match.
Then we got Queen of the Ring, Becky Lynch, Liv Morgan, Alexa Bliss, and Chelsea in a four-way. And then Obafemi will open up the show. So that is the lineup for tonight's Raw. And we're going to wrap it up for today, but we'll be back after Raw tomorrow. We'll talk all of the news. Dave and Garrett, we're up on Friday with a new show. And the New Observer's out as well, so check that out. And a lot of stuff. And that's it. We'll talk to you again after a while.